Thanks to the hardest working man in liberal talk, Ben Birch. Starting in 2002 with the initiation of the White Rose Society, whiterosesociety.org, Ben single-handedly saved liberal talk in the United States, eventually making it possible for the horn to happen. That's why we use that phrase for Ben. His work is also tireless and patient. Thanks to Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net, and coalriverwind.org. They are indeed the bravest, hardest-working people I know. And when you realize what we have to deal with here in West Virginia, you know why it is that I say such a thing. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you.
In with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! It is July the 13th, and a weird enough day for me to think that it's probably Friday, but it isn't. It's Monday, and that only means, well, it's going to get weirder, isn't it? Welcome to the Horn for this Monday night broadcast. John Fox, if you're around, I hope you are feeling better, my brother. John emailed in to let us all know that he was under the weather last night, and hence no all foxed up for Sunday. Hopefully he will be back above the weather very soon. Let's see. God, I don't know where to start. Nazis in Pennsylvania, Nazis in Washington, D.C. Oh, wait. This all makes perfectly good sense. How about let's start close to home? Sure, why not? You know, I told you it was going to be movie night Saturday night for the whole fam family. And indeed it was. We made our way down to Charleston, the state capital, for the world premiere at the West Virginia Cultural Center. The world premiere of Mary Lynn Evans' riveting documentary, Coal Country. We were all set to be on time and everything. But as we have noted on a number of occasions, if there's a God, and if, as, for instance, the Muslims say, he has many names, well, one of those names is irony. God, dog, the flying spaghetti monster, whatever he is one of irony, first and foremost. For as we went down the mountain, around the curves, through the dips, over the blah, 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 over the river and through the woods to, you know, we got to the foot of the mountain, almost to Gauley Bridge, and there is a beautiful, beautiful, beautiful waterfall there. It's called Cathedral Falls. when it gets really, really brutally, I mean just brutally cold in the winter, crazy people come and climb the frozen, climb the falls that have frozen into solid ice. But it wasn't winter. It was high summer. The falls were falling beautifully. And also there at Cathedral Falls, a CSX railway line crosses. And it was there that we stopped and there that we sat. And sat. And sat. Why were we sitting? Well, we were made late for the premiere of Coal Country by a coal train! Yes! A couple of miles worth of boxcars trailing their way out of West Virginia carrying our wealth, carrying our health, carrying our future. Yep. It wasn't Mr. Peabody's coal train. But it was damn sure hauling it away, thank you very much, John Prine. So we were late, and we missed some of the fun, and it was hard to get, well, it was impossible to get a seat in the theater. It's not that small a theater, there's a good number of seats, but it was jam-packed, and lots of people standing outside the auditorium, sort of peeking in to get a view of the screen, and they had a little portable PA system hooked up out in the lobby so that you could at least hear the audio. And so that's what a lot of people did. I did get to go in and watch a little bit of it. And I learned a little lesson. Because you see, there were a whole bunch of Fockers in there, you know, friends of Cole. Because they were bound and determined that they were going to keep them tree huggers from seeing that tree hugging movie. But it was kind of stealthy like, really. Because the Fockers then had to sit there and actually deal with the fact, the multiple facts presented to them about exactly what it is they're doing to this state and this region, about what they're doing to their own people as well as the rest of us. But just not that there's a very, very great likelihood that you ever will, but should you? Just a little piece of information. Just a piece of advice from old Bob, because I'm that kind of nice guy. Piece of advice from old Bob. Never go to the movies with a Fokker. Don't. Because they haven't caught it, you know, mountain removers are not the smartest bunch in the lot. For instance, there was the young Fokker couple who had just gotten married, and being fundamentalist and right-wing friends of Cole, they'd saved themselves for merge. And they got to their wedding night, and, well, the young Fokker fellow was kind of confused. And he didn't quite know what to do on his wedding night. And finally, in frustration, his young Fokker wife, who had at least had a little bit of a talk from her Fokker mother, said, "Honey, take that thing you play with and put it where I pee." So the young Fokker man got up out of bed, got his bowling ball, and threw it in the sink. "I'll be here all week," tried the veal. No, they're not a bright lot. So the reason I say never take a Fokker to the movies with you is, I don't know, are you like me when you go to the movies and you pay an exorbitant amount of money, although this was free, but you go to the movies and you pay an exorbitant amount of money, and God knows the popcorn's expensive as all hell, and they salt the living bejesus out of it, so then you'll go and buy some high fructose corn syrup laden pop to wash it down with, which is also, you gotta take a boat loan out to get it. You understand the dodge. Anyway, but you spend all that money going to the movies, and you want to sit there and watch the movie. Now, if it's a funny movie, you expect that people will laugh. If it's a tragedy, you expect to hear a little, a little of that. But nothing makes me crazier in the movie theater than somebody who sits and talks like it's their living room all the way through the movie. I'll have you know that in my younger, singler days, I actually stopped dating relationships because of certain otherwise attractive, otherwise available young women wouldn't shut up in the movie. I'm just that way, I guess. And I'll be in trouble for that one. But anyway, you know, after the movie, oh, you know, when you go to the little dessert place and you have a little piece of cheesecake and a cup of coffee after the movie and you talk about the relative men, not during the movie! But no, not the Fockers. Oh, no, not the friends of Cole. Not the boys from Argus Energy. They didn't really wear their stripes Saturday night. They wore their company T-shirts black and it says Argus Energy. No, not the friends of Cole. The Fockers hooted and hollered at the movie screen all the way through. And it was a movie theater, so they kind of had to behave themselves. They were out in public. It wasn't like they were young Adam Pauly on Cayford Mountain not thinking anybody was videoing his skinhead self and his shirtless self. No, they knew the eyes of the world were on them. There were TV cameras out there. And so they had to sort of be well-behaved. So I was able to lean over to one of them and say, "Psst, hey, buddy. That woman you're talking to on the screen, she's not really here. It's called a movie." Of course, for all my trouble and my sarcasm, I got a F you, buddy. And then at the beginning, and just a little bit of West Virginia history for you, so you'll know what the sense of outrage stems from. Before the movie, the film's creator, Mary Lynn Evans. By the way, if you want to learn more about the film, you can go to Coal Country, C-O-A-L-C-O-U-S-B-E-H. Sorry, Mary Lynn. You can go to Coal Country, C-O-A-L-C-O-U-N-T-R-Y, Coal Country, the movie.com. At some point in time, it'll be showing on PBS, and I hope you'll keep an eye out for it and watch it when it does. You're going to want to see this. Among other things, you'll get to see a lot of the people that I talk about here on the program. But prior to the beginning of the film, Mary Lynn Evans made some opening remarks, and she recognized a truly wonderful, wonderful gentleman, a statesman of West Virginia, the likes of whom Robert C. Byrd can only aspire to. And I'm talking about 94-year-old former congressman, former member of the Truman administration, former Secretary of State, author, Second World War hero, Ken Heckler. She introduced Ken Heckler, and the Fockers jeered him and booed him and catcalled him and manifested every bit of disrespect of which they were capable. No joke. Now, Ken Heckler is a man who, when the rest of the country didn't, sort of like it's been until the issue of mountain removal became more prevalent and more people are learning about it now. But most of the country was indifferent to what happened to coal miners, real coal miners, who went underneath the earth to get at coal. When the rest of the country was indifferent to the plight of the coal miner, Ken Heckler was standing up for them. Ken Heckler was fighting like a man possessed for meaningful regulation that would not only protect and preserve, but save lives in Appalachia's coal mines. Ken Heckler never had a doubt but that black lung was real, even back when the coal companies and their hired gun doctors would come in and say, well, see him, he smokes. That's what's wrong with his lungs. He smokes. Ain't no such thing as black lung. Ken Heckler knew there was. And Ken Heckler was willing to hare-lip hell itself to get help for coal miners, for black lung, for mine safety. Everything that most underground miners more or less take for granted today, Ken Heckler was responsible for. And when the federal government, on behalf of the coal companies, denied a man his black lung benefits and fought him at every turn, hoping to wait the man out until he would conveniently drop dead, Ken Heckler was there. And Ken Heckler raised 18 shades of hell for thousands upon thousands of individual miners in this state who got black lung benefits directly and exclusively because of what he had done in advocating for them. That is Ken Heckler. You ever heard a famous World War story called The Bridge at Remagen? You know about that because of Ken Heckler. Ken Heckler wrote The Bridge at Remagen, a tale of amazing heroism from the European theater of the Second World War. That is Ken Heckler. The men and women who booed and jeered him and made greater asses of themselves than perhaps many of us even thought they were capable. Why, their daddies and their granddaddies, and some even their great-granddaddies, benefited from the man whom they would have gladly spat upon had he just gotten within reach of a well-timed loogie. That's a Focker for you. That's how they behave. And you know me well enough, I hope, that I don't say they and those people lightly. But I have found I am hard-pressed to refer to the Fockers in any other way. You know, as a rule, we mountain people, if we have everything in the world taken from us, we try to retain some degree of our own human dignity. And it has been frequently said of mountain people, Appalachian folk, that even if they have little, what little they have, they will gladly share. And that we tender respect to those who have earned it. Well, thanks to the race to the bottom, which mountain removal has engendered in Appalachia, as of this past Saturday night, the 11th of July, 2009, that old myth of the mountaineer is dead. Because standing before them, standing before many of us who simply wanted to see the film and were ready to quietly sit and watch, but also before a contingent of ill-bred, ill-mannered, ill-tempered thugs Those thugs spat upon themselves, upon their mothers and fathers, upon their heritage, and upon this very state itself. And then the film rolled. And every time their master, Don Blankenship, would appear on screen, they responded like the old dogs in that RCA gramophone, RCA Victor portrait, leaning a little harder toward the speaker. You remember the motto, his master's voice. So that every time Don Blankenship would show up on the screen talking about the Greeniacs and communists, they would hoot and squeal in delight. You would have thought to have been in the room that the Fockers thought it was, I don't know, wrestling down to the armory. But it was there were no altercations. All went well. After the film was over, some of those guys wearing their Argus t-shirts spilled out into the onto the little plaza in front of the cultural center and began hooting and hollering and screaming at someone that they deemed was a tree hugger and an out-of-stater. What about my home? What about the homes of those that you worked to destroy who are 9th and 10th generation Appalachian folk, buddy? Yeah, but what about my job? That was Saturday. Brilliant film. Got to see people that, of course, we know and love. And got to see... this is what it boils down to. We got to see the best behavior that a gang of Fockers have to offer. I've just described what their behavior was like, and that's as good as it gets. That is as good as it gets. So do keep an eye out. Go to the website. Give Mary Lynn and the production company a little bit of website click love by hitting the site coalcountrythemovie.com. Not .org, .com. Coalcountrythemovie.com. You will hear their audio begins. Audio begins when you open the site. And you will hear a rendition of the old labor ballad, "Whose Side Are You? Which Side Are You On?" as performed by Natalie Merchant, that will, if you're anything at all like me, send chills down your spine. It's featured in the film. Also featured in the film, some music by Kathy Mattea, beautifully done, also soul-stirring. Go and have a look, read around, and keep an eye out for when it shows up on PBS. Because even if it's airing during the time that this show is on, I heartily encourage you to shut everything down and go and watch it. For those of you who have only heard me talk about it but have not seen it, this will be the best vision of it you will ever get, short of coming here. So that's where we begin, by golly. That's where we begin. Movie night for the Kincaids in the big city with the Fockers. That isn't where we will wind up by any stretch of the imagination. No. No, we got a lot of other things on the plate today. I got caught. Boxcars? No, they were not boxcars that held us up. They were gondola cars. I knew I was, the open top thingies. Gondola car. No, those aren't gondola cars. Not boxcars. Okay. Are those gondola cars? I thought gondola cars were like the ones that haul the timber and stuff. But no, they were not boxcars. They were cars of some sort, and they held us up and made us late. You guys do not let me get away with anything. Jesus, if Flesh Flimball had to deal with the kind of fact-checking you guys do on the fly, he wouldn't be able to do 15 minutes of radio, let alone 3 hours. No, we've got a lot of things to go into this evening. Interesting. You remember CNN was largely blessed with dirty coals, dirty money, during the pageant season, and the Democratic and Republican pageants in the last election year were all brought to you by Clean Coal. Well, looks like that buys you a little something. Headline at CNN, Country's betting tech can clean up coal. I'll take that bet. I don't care how much you can't be. I'll take that bet. Can't be done. Now, this isn't like we can't go to the moon. That was technology overcoming physical hurdles. What we're talking about with clean coal and carbon capture and storage, what we're talking about is an absolute violation of the principles of physics. You know, purple polka-dotted unicorns, the stuff like that, you know, flying horses. The stuff that you can get in major religion books and Bibles and so forth, but you can't get in reality. Tinkerbell stuff. This is Tinkerbell science. The corporate side likes, well, you know, them tree huggers, they believe that junk science. That's their phrase? Okay, I got one for you fellas. You're buying into Tinkerbell science, where if you only believe in it and throw enough money at it, it'll be real. Sorry. Thanks for playing. Here's a year's supply of Rice-A-Roni, the San Francisco treat, and a copy of the home game. No, but apparently that buys you some pretty good PR. John D. Sutter, the author of the article on CNN.com, in the high-stakes game of climate change, the United States and other countries are betting on the idea that technology can make dirty coal cleaner. Yeah. No. But it's there. It's there. But, of course, I would be remiss if I did not take note of the fact that today was the opening of the Sonia Sotomayor confirmation hearings for her seat on the Supreme Court of the United States of America. And most of the day was taken up in pontification. I don't know who sets the rules for these Senate affairs. But why, and I don't care what committee it is, it's not just the Judiciary Committee. Why do we have to have, because it's theater, because it's wrestling, because it's just like what happens down to the armory on Saturday nights. Y'all come. Why do we have to have these interminable blatherings from these senators before? Get in there and start the question. Now, I do not for an instant challenge the right of a senator to make a summation. That's the nature of the debate inside the Senate. But the opening statements are just grandstanding BS. And they offer opportunities for freaks from the anti-abortion debate to come screaming into the... CNN reporting that the disruption at the hearing today was caused by Jane Roe of Roe v. Wade fame, screaming at Dianne Feinstein, Senator Dianne Feinstein, "What about the unborn babies?" To which I simply answer, "What about the born ones? Shouldn't we take care of the ones who are born before we start worrying about the imaginary babies?" I mean, I'm just saying. "What about the unborn babies?" So they, you know, hauled her away and find her and stuff. I guess she managed to sneak into the hearing room without sitting down in the hallway, because she would have been arrested right then and there for demonstrating. We know those rules now. I wonder if my friend the Capitol policeman was there. "You will not sit down in my hallway." Jesus. But I caught some of the pontificating. I caught, you know, it was funny watching Arlen Specter try to be a Democrat. Of course, then again, where the Senate's concerned, it's funny watching about half of the so-called Democratic majority of the Senate try to be Democrats. I saw him make his statements in support of diversity on the court, and we shouldn't have waited. And, you know, it's all true. It's just that I know that a few months ago, he would not have dared say those things about a Democratic nominee, a Democratic president's nominee, because he was busy being a pig-licking. See, I don't trust wolves in sheep's clothing. And I caught some of Senator Charles Grassley, who has just annoyed the piss out of me since the first time I ever saw him when he was a young but obnoxious right winger back when he was defending Ronnie Reagan and that thug of a former Marine colonel, what's his name, Oliver North, way back in the mid to late 1980s during the Iran-Contra hearings. I remember watching him going, "Oh, you jackass, what's wrong with the people of Iowa? How can they send a good man like Tom Harkin to the Senate at the same time that they send a freak like Charles Grassley?" But they do. So I watched some of the pontificating from him. That mush-mouthed old bigot, that hateful old drawling goon, Jefferson Beauregard Sessions III, was there leading the charge as well. He was disgusting, to say the least. And it was all for nothing. It was all wrestling. It was all theater. Not a bit of reality to it. Just a bunch of hooey. Why waste the people's time? Why waste the money of the people of the United States so some senator, Democrat or Republican, remember, I'm equal opportunity here, can blather? I want to hear the nominee. I want to see how the nominee responds to the questioning. And none of that was aided by day-long prattling. So, you know, just it will continue tomorrow, and it will be darned interesting. A little video here from the folks over at Think Progress, the audio to video, that is, of some of the remarks today. That's very brief.
When Chief Justice Roberts came before this committee in 2005, he famously said a Supreme Court justice is like an umpire.
Umpires.
Calling balls and strikes.
No balls and no strikes.
Balls and strikes. It's a little hard to see home plate from right field.
Charming. Because the balls and strikes thing was a carefully crafted right-wing the talking point back during the Roberts confirmation. And, of course, a judge must be so much more than an umpire behind the plate calling balls and strikes. It really does take, because, you know, if you think about Oliver Wendell Holmes, Jr., and his comment that it is possible to live greatly in the law, you have to take into account that living greatly in the law does not mean one gives up one's humanity and becomes some sort of a judicial robot, which is what the right-wing justices are. They are little activist judicial robots who, without fail, will vote on the side of authority, authoritarianism, the right wing. Anything that smells even faintly of fascism is their darling and their poster child. But they hide it behind things like balls and strikes and balls and strikes. So we will, I think we will be, treated to some interesting examples of typical right-wing hate here in the next couple of days, and it bears watching. It most assuredly does. So again, another place from which to diverge, and something else for us to inquire. What do you expect out of that? You think Jefferson Beauregard Sessions III might actually screw up and use an epithet or two, or stick his foot in it real good? You know, if he feels threatened enough, he might. Because, like so many right-wingers, not a very bright man. And if you can just push him hard enough, he'll make a genuine braying ass of himself. I have real hope for that. That he would be such an embarrassment that, you know, Alabama would look up and go, "What were we thinking? I mean, him?" Sure would be nice if a credible Democrat would rise up and run against that smarmy dumbass. May not happen, though. So that's just, like I said, that's just a couple of jumping off points for the beginning of the evening and the beginning of the week. Wherever you want to go is fine by me. You know the phone number, 877-443-2366, 877 the numeral 4, head on. That's the toll-free way to get through. If you want to spend your own money, 304-658-3333 is the number. 304-658-3333. We've been hearing from new listeners, and it's all very exciting, and I hope you'll feel free to chime in if you've never called the program before. I look forward to it, in fact. You can also reach me via email. Bob Kincaid, BobKincaid, at gmail.com. Bob Kincaid at gmail.com. And by the way, I'm reminded by our buddy David in Tennessee that Charles Grassley, explaining Grassley, remember the other night when we talked about that weird crypto-fascist evangelical gang that operates and lurks in the shadows in Washington, D.C., called The Family? The Family that has that place they call C Street, the C Street House? You know, where John Ensign came to talk to his brothers in Christ about that woman that he was a-banging on, and where Mark Sanford came before at some point before he decided to hike the Appalachian Trail, nudge, nudge, wink, wink. Yeah, that family. Charles Grassley's a member of that. Yeah, really. So, why am I not surprised? Why am I not surprised? Which leads me to what I think will be the perfect bumper. This is America's listener-supported liberal voice. This is The Horn.
D-Ball! There's nappies in the bathroom, just below the stairs. Always something happening, and nothing going on. There's always something cooking, and nothing in the pot. They're starving back in China, so finish what you got.
Yeah, that sort of just seemed rather, self-choosing. Strange days indeed. Monday the 13th, all. Look, let's get right to it. Let's get this stuff out of the way. The sooner we do, the sooner it's passed. And, well, but it never passes, does it? God, right-wing hate. Ugh. I learned something today. I've learned something in the last week or so. You know, I told you that our good buddy, Spike Rogan from Eastern PA wrote in after viewing the video of the, Massey thug at the picnic on Kayford Mountain. The guy who ripped his shirt off and, oh, there's more video and you haven't seen it. And there was another video that came out this weekend and different angles, a little bit more of this, a little bit. There's even more stuff yet to come of this freak. But in seeing the first video of it, Spike wrote in and said, you know, Bob, that guy looks a lot more like a skinhead than anything else in the world. And, of course, he did, what with his shaven head. But he pointed out the tattoos on him. And I got to, and I did notice them, and there was this the weird geometric stuff. Well, then Spike sent me another news story last night. And it was really quite interesting. Nazis in Pennsylvania. And, you know, not just, no, this from the, from a publication called the Pocono Record. News and information from Northeast Pennsylvania. The reporter is Dan Barrett. Dan Barrett was arrested, last week, about a week ago. No, not Dan Barrett was arrested. What I'm saying, Dan Barrett writes about an arrest a week ago. Come on, Bob. Get with the program. No. Dan Barrett writes about an arrest about a week ago of an individual by the name of Michael John Parrish. The 23-year-old Parrish was arrested and charged with murdering his girlfriend and their 18-month-old son. Prosecutors have announced that they will pursue the death penalty. He was photographed as he was arrested, and the photographs were enlightening, shall we say. This guy had a bunch of ink, and this is no criticism of tattoos or ink by any stretch of the imagination. But in this particular instance, Michael Parrish, 23 years old, had, let's see, there's a Confederate flag on his arm. There's a Celtic cross, a couple of them. There's an out-and-out swastika. Boldly black on in a band around his left bicep is the word Hitler. Some sort of bizarre right-wing initials tattooed across his fingers. And on his neck, a weird geometric design. That when I looked at it and thought back to the geometrics on Andrew Pauly's tattooed pate. I realized were probably what I didn't think they were. Did you know? And of course you did. Did you know that there is more than one way to make a swastika? you and I are most familiar with the typical German Nazi variety, the Hakenkreuz, the broken cross. But there are other manifestations of it. And lo and behold, Michael John Parrish has one on his neck. And it is a series of crescents intertwined, so that they do, in fact, create the same impression that that clockwork effect of a swastika. And of course, the swastika also appears in Native American art, Amerindian art, if you will, and other parts of the globe as well, as some sort of magical talisman. Hitler and his Nazi party did not invent the symbol. They merely rendered it a symbol filled with hate forevermore, much as rebellious Southerners did with that red flag with the X, blue X across it, and the 13 or however 12, I don't know, stars in it. No, offhand, I don't know how many stars. I got to say, I'm kind of proud of that. One of the few times I've ever been proud of my ignorance. 15 of the tattoos on Michael John Parrish's body, on his arms and neck, according to the Anti-Defamation League and the Southern Poverty Law Center, two completely different organizations, about 15 of the tattoos on his arms and neck carried some sort of racist or white pride message. And they even have meaning separate from, the groupings have meaning separate from the individual designs. Above his right elbow, he had a black band with the number 22. That stands for Firm 22. And that is a subgroup within another group called the Vinlanders Social Club. The Vinlanders Social Club being a skinhead gang. Mark Pitkavage is director of the investigative research unit for the Anti-Defamation League and said Parrish knew a bunch of the Vinlander Social Club guys in Pennsylvania and hung out with them, noting that they have a presence in Pennsylvania and overlap with another group known as the Keystone Skinheads. They are semi, they're semi anti-authoritarian. And the people in Northeast Pennsylvania are suddenly a little bit unnerved because they're not used to imagining that they've got Nazis and skinheads in their midst. These hate-filled, bigoted, racist, terrorist thugs also have adopted the crest of an Italian division of the Waffen-SS, which they use to entice people of Italian heritage into their ranks. So what? I mean, I know you're not saying, so what? But the fact of the matter is, this is a 23-year-old skinhead with a bunch of ink on his body. I mean, there's no way you can't see this stuff. It's all over him. It's like he was a member of the Tattoo of the Month Club. Or should we say the White Supremacist Tattoo of the Month Club. So what, though? He's a skinhead. He's a terrorist. He murdered their 18-month-old son and his girlfriend. That didn't come out quite right. The 18-month-old son didn't have a girlfriend. He murdered his girlfriend and the 18-month-old baby boy that they had together. It's just another day in America. Because by virtue of the various and sundry deals with the devil that we have made, we are going to have this. This ain't Singapore. Some we tolerate so that we can have a First Amendment guarantee of freedom of speech and of association and of assembly. Some we tolerate. You must remember that the much maligned American Civil Liberties Union actually defended Nazis when they sought to march in Skokie, Illinois. Some of this we have to tolerate so that the rest of us can have some sort of free speech rights. Some sort of constitutional rights. The value of which, I am concerned to hear, Supreme Court Justice nominee Sonia Sotomayor opine on. I'd like to know how vigorously she intends to defend the Fourth Amendment. How much how much weight she gives to the national security state. That's my concern. But no, it's just another day. It's just another murder in America. Just another dead young woman, just another dead baby, and just another crazed white guy, not even crazed, another maniacal white guy charged with the crime. So what? Well, here's the so what part. Michael John Parrish was a corrections officer at the Monroe County, Pennsylvania Correctional Facility. Yeah, he was a prison guard. That is the so what. They have infiltrated the military of the United States, and they have infiltrated our corrections and law enforcement departments. And you see them in law enforcement every day, most like. Skin-headed, roided-up, buffed-up the police officers are the order of the day. That's how you wind up with beatings and shootings and so forth that we get from law enforcement on a fairly routine basis. Imagine that. But why are you surprised? This is the same prison system that gave us Abu Ghraib, isn't it? Yeah, it is. Charles Grainer and Lindy England were prison guards, if I recall correctly, before they went to Iraq and participated in the national shame that was, and probably still is, our torture program. Yeah. And we know that the military is turning a blind eye to its personnel who are right-wing extremist terrorists, while at the same time ferreting out every last gay person they can find. What's that? We spent $1 million teaching you to fly an aircraft, but we spent $10 million teaching you to fly an aircraft, but you're gay. You got to get out. Oh, what's that? You've got a swastika tattoo and you're fighting for white pride in Iraq? You stay in. What a guy. Yeah. Amazing, isn't it? That's the America that the right wing yearned for, and that the right wing has largely succeeded in creating. That's also the first hour of the program. And you are welcome to jump in any old time. This is Activist Radio, America's listener-supported liberal voice. This is The Horn.
Yeah. Thinking ahead means preparing for the future of our children, our grandchildren, and our wild, wonderful West Virginia. Developing our renewable energy resources is the best way to ensure a clean, sustainable way of life and safe, good-paying jobs for generations to come. Here in the Mountain State, our most abundant energy resource is the wind. Our ridges and majestic mountain peaks shape and direct the wind like stones in a mountain stream. Coal River Mountain is the ideal place for developing wind power. The Coal River Mountain Wind Farm will provide us with a source of clean energy and good jobs forever. We have the power to make our future happen now. Be a part of the clean energy solution for West Virginia by visiting coalriverwind.org or call 304-854-2182. That's coalriverwind.org, 854-2182.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
The Service Employees International Union continues to make strides when it comes to organizing hospitals and health care facilities in Massachusetts. Last week, more than 400 workers at Union Hospital in Lynn voted to join the local 1199 branch of the union. The successful organizing vote comes on the heels of a victory last month when the SEIU was granted the right to represent nearly 500 workers at Kearney Hospital in Boston. And 3 months ago, 800 workers at St. Elizabeth's Medical Center voted in favor of joining the union. The successful votes represent a sea change in the Boston area, where for decades no hospitals were unionized. Auto workers in Fenton, Missouri are ready to fight for their jobs and are calling on the community to join them. Workers at a Chrysler assembly plant in Fenton that watched as the last Dodge Ram was assembled more than a week ago are planning a Keep Jobs in America rally at the plant on July 24th. The jobs at the Fenton plant are being sent to Mexico and Michigan. Overall, Chrysler is closing 8 plants, and part of the rally will be protesting the company taking billions in federal bailout money as it shifts many jobs out of the United States. Target complains in an anti-union video that it's becoming a union target. Doug Cunningham reports.
Someday, you might come into work and find pickets telling guests to not shop at Target. Or you might read articles about unions threatening to boycott our stores. None of that helps you or any other team member. After all, every one of us depends on our guests for our jobs.
That's an excerpt from an anti-union video produced by Target stores. Never intended to be seen by the general public, it's making the rounds on the internet. In it, the giant retailer pushes anti-union propaganda at its workers while trying to maintain a friendly, we're all on the same team face. It's an effort to convince its workers that they don't need a union representing their interests, raising their wages, and improving their benefits. Target's Jim Rauter, identified in the video as Director of Labor Relations and Senior Counsel for Target, tells workers that Target wants to stay union-free.
The union would not improve anything at Target. Not for our team members, not for our guests, and not for our company.
Target specifically mentions its grocery store operations in the video, a sign that it's afraid of the United Food and Commercial Workers Union.
Here is today's economic report. Older worker unemployment rates are on the rise. The unemployment rate for 55-year-olds and older jumped by 4.4% from May to June, in comparison to an increase of 1% among those under the age of 55. According to the Bureau of Labor Statistics, the average length of time older workers are unemployed is 29.9 weeks. That's 8 weeks longer than the amount of unemployment time for younger workers.
You've been listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head-on with Bob Kincaid.
Hour two begins. Fascinating. I heard that earlier when I was downloading it, Labor Radio News. I heard that earlier today, the story about Target. And to be fair, just as a reminder, let's not kid ourselves into thinking that Walmart is the bad actor where American retail is concerned. Because they're not. They're a bad actor. They may be the worst, but frankly, they're not much different when it comes to the rights of working people. They're not that much different than Target. Now, you heard the excerpt from that video. Do you know who had to, do you know what they did with it? Well, you see, because we do not take seriously in this country, because we don't take seriously the First Amendment right to freedom of association, which entails the freedom to not associate as well, if you work at Target, there's a chance at some point in time you were told to come to a team meeting. Because, see, you're not a worker. You're a member of a team. Granted, the guy that's the manager, he's the quarterback. Maybe you're a reserve tackle. Or a utility infielder. But you're on a team. You're not a worker. Because the idea of being a worker has been stripped of its dignity by corporate America. You're not allowed to think of yourself as a worker anymore. You have to be a team member. Or you're an associate. No, associates are at law firms and accounting firms, okay? Not at retail outlets where people are paid $6 and $7 and maybe $8. Oh boy, $10 an hour. And damn sure aren't allowed to have a union. No. Team member. What a bunch of psychobabble. But anyway, you might work for Target. And you'll get a little flyer. And it'll say, there's going to be a Target team meeting right after you get off work. Punch off the clock and come to the team meeting. Or maybe they'll have it while you're on the clock. But either way, if you don't go to the team meeting, it's your ass. They can and will fire you for not coming and sitting there while they browbeat you over how badly you don't want or need a union. And guess what? You don't have the right to get up and walk out. You do not have the right to not listen to anti-union BS unless you also want to exercise your right not to have a job. And there's just not a lot of people in this country right now that feel free enough to walk away from the ability to feed their families, such as they may. There was an attempt in the legislature a couple of years ago here in West Virginia to explicitly pass a law that said you do not have to put up with this anti-union rubbish, that you can get up and walk out. Guess what? Yeah, they passed around some money and some PAC donations and campaign contributions, and ran some editorials that said that if people were free enough to walk out of an anti-union sleaze meeting, that West Virginia would become a hellhole for business. And I tell you about that happening in West Virginia because that's where I am. Don't think that because you're somewhere else, that doesn't also obtain. There are very few states that enshrine enshrine the right of a working person to get up and walk the hell out of a bunch of the corporatist propaganda. That, among other things, just to sort of make a tidy little bow of all of this, that's why Massey Fockers
have to show up wearing their work clothes at rallies. They don't dare not come because it means their job. See, when you and I engage in some level of activism, it's usually because we feel a moral certitude about it and some sort of a commitment to an issue based upon not usually our wallets. We're liberals. We don't necessarily think that way. Usually it has to do with some instinct that rises from that common human core that we all share. And so we show up at a rally or a protest or a march, whether it be for health care or to end mountaintop removal or bring our military, as many of them, safe home, and all of them home one way or another from the ongoing nightmares in Iraq and Afghanistan. We do that because we search ourselves and we know that it is the morally right thing to do. The other side quite frequently shows up because they are threatened that they dare not. By example, there's a guy who is a coal industry, foreman, supervisor, manager, some sort, who shows up in Mary Lynn Evans' film Coal Country. And he sits there and he says, "My daughter goes to school. and they tell her that she needs to write an essay about why mountaintop removal's bad. And I tell my 9-year-old daughter when she comes home and tells me that, I said, why don't you tell your teacher just to go ahead and have you write an essay on why my daddy should lose his job?" Yeah, it's right there. Okay, yeah, I'm probably playing it. But no, he's sitting there whimpering and crying with the tears are rolling out of his face. And I guess I'm just a mean son of a... Because I looked at him and I said, and I was just thinking to myself, "Mister, how could you possibly put that kind of an emotional load on your own child?" But then again, that's the kind of mindset that obtains inside corporate America. We are all just pawns. We are all just things to be consumed and spat out at the end of our usefulness. Whew. Golly, Ned. But you see, he does that because that is the mind poison that has been poured in through his ears and eyes for however long he's been involved in that corporate industry. And it's sad. And apparently now the man is catching hell from the other mountain removers around him for having participated in the film. Yep. But that's the America you live in. You are aware of it. Millions upon millions of others are not. Not aware that you have a First Amendment right of freedom to assembly and freedom of association that is also negative in its effect insofar as you have the right not to assemble and not to associate. Because you see, if that target, any given target, any Walmart, had a union inside it, then by virtue of the collective bargaining agreement, the local could say, hey, no, sorry, it's not in the agreement, you can't do it. And that would end it. And we don't have that. The Employee Free Choice Act would effectively affirm that right. And again, just to sort of recap, the first bill that Senator Franken signed on as a co-sponsor was the Employee Free Choice Act. Now we have to find out what it takes to turn Ben Nelson of Nebraska, Blanche Lincoln of Arkansas, David Pryor of Arkansas, Mary Landrieu, Arlen Specter. We have to find out what it takes to turn them into Americans. We have to find out what it takes to turn them into people who actually support and defend the Constitution of the United States, because everything that's in the Employee Free Choice Act has within its core basic elements that are enshrined in the Bill of Rights, but that have been chipped away at over the years by corporate America. There's nothing in the Employee Free Choice Act that says Walmart has to have a union, or that Target does either, for that matter. All there is the opportunity for working people form such a union, should they so choose. It is so simple as to beggar my comprehension why any American who loves his or her country would scoff at the need for something like that. But here it is, the 13th day of July. Harry Reid looked me in the eye and said, we will have a card check bill by summer. It's summer, Harry. We don't have a card check bill. We don't want a card check bill. We want the Employee Free Choice Act. And we don't have it. And we're still waiting. We can hope. But you know how the old saying goes, hope in one hand and in the other and see which one fills up first. Yeah, so there's that. The other little thing that broke over the weekend, do I want to go there yet or do I want to go there? Okay. No, let's finish off some of this hate stuff. I'm not sure because I haven't seen a follow-up. But by now, the new head of the Young Republicans organization may very well be a woman who is about as hateful as they come, a sort of 38-year-old Coulter-esque wannabe. Her name is Audra Shea. And as of late last week, she was expecting to be elevated to the leadership of the Young Republicans over the weekend. On her Facebook page, which, by the way, if no one has ever told you, none of ever disappears. On her Facebook page, one of her friends wrote, and this is a quote, Obama bin Laden is the new terrorist. Muslim is on T-H-E-R-E side. Muslim is on their side. Need to take this country back from all of these mad coons and illegals. Audra Shea replied 8 minutes later, "You tell 'em, Eric, LOL." Yeah, that's the head of the College Republicans, but you really wouldn't expect anything more or less out of that gang of youngish thugs. She's 38, Audra Shea. This was the gang that crowed in delight after Paul Wellstone died in an airplane crash in talking about creating a Republican majority in the United States Senate. Said, well, we had to get rid of Paul Wellstone, and we did. You know, you might just sort of write it off and say, ah, well, that kind of crazy crap shows up on a Facebook page. But that's not all there is. In October 2008, you remember the story about the folks who hung an effigy of Sarah Palin outside their home in Hollywood for Halloween decorations. Audra Shea wrote, what? No Obama in a noose? Come on now, it's just freedom, F-R-E-E-D-O-M-E. I told you, they're not real sharp. Of speech, no one in Atlanta would take that wrong, LOL. I hate LOL. I'm going to try to make sure I don't put it in any more emails. The following morning, she came back, you know, like a dog returning to it. She came back and said, apparently I could not spell last night. I am wondering if the guys with the Palin noose would care if we had a bunch of homosexuals in a noose. Time after time after time, numerous posts, Audra Shea says that President Obama is, quote, anti-American, unquote. And she prattles on about his disdain of this country. Yeah. Oh, it goes on. Remember, the leader of the college, not college, but the leader of the young Republicans. Let's see, back on June the 30th, she went off the rails again, talking about President Obama and how he handled or didn't handle the Honduran crisis. She wrote, and I quote, this is an outrage, and I cannot believe this nation has him as our leader. It makes me sick. My disdain for Obama is directly proportionate for his disdain of this country. So then somebody chimes in on her page and responds to what she's just written and says, here's what I am getting tired of. If you call Obama a socialist, terrorist, anti-American, whatever, then you're kind of calling me that, too, because I voted for him and support him for the most part. Or you can claim that I didn't really know what I voted for, and in so doing, you're kind of saying I'm ignorant and questioning my intelligence. That's a guy named Derek Moss, allegedly writing. She responds, this would-be leader of the young Republicans. I think that you are ignorant if you believe this man is anything but anti-American. He freely writes about Marxist philosophies. That's writes as R-I-G-H-T-S. I never called him a terrorist, but if his policies are socialist, which they are, then what would you call him? His actions speak very loudly, and his actions are very anti-American. You just cannot get past it. You might not like it, but the truth is what it is. On and on and on. And, you know, the Young Republicans, they're not exactly a small group. Granted, they're still part of that weird rump of the American body politic that remains of the Republican Party. This stuff's all over the place. By the way, one of Audra Shea's most ardent supporters is Louisiana Governor Piyush Jindal. And all of a sudden, his support for her seems to be waning a little bit because the governor's traveling and can't make time to comment on this. Grover Norquist, the guy who likes to throttle things in bathtubs, drown things in bathtubs. Yeah, Grover. His spokesman said, well, he's friends with Audra on Facebook like he's friends with everybody else. He accepts all friendships. Yeah. Remember. We need to take this country back. You know, we talked about that a little bit ago, a few nights ago. The hate is boiling up like some sort of suppurating sore. And it is oozing all over the country. How's about, and of course, you'll find no surprise in this. If you want to get really dirty and just absolutely head to toe covered in right wing filth, you know the place to go. Yeah, sure you do. Free Republic. Freeperville has been the nastiest right-wing place on the intertube webs for a long, long time. But every now and then, they reach down and show you just how low they can go. They sort of peel the skin back on the mask of what little restraint they have and show you the vicious, dripping, fanged monster that is conservatism. A photo came out not too long back of Malia Obama. You know, adolescent. And in it, she is walking in what appears to be a crowd. And she's wearing a T-shirt, a white T-shirt, with a great big peace symbol on it. You remember the peace symbol. You remember the Vietnam era. I remember being a child during that era and being sternly admonished that that was... Of course, this was in the basement of the Southern Baptist Church. That was anti-American. That's a mockery of the passion of our Lord and Savior Jesus Christ who died for our sins. It's an upside-down broken cross. No, dummy, that's the swastika. We've already talked about that. It's a broken cross. Anybody who wears that can't be a Christian. So apparently, that symbol is making a return, if not the actual principle for which it stands. And the photo was picked up and a thread was made out of it over at Freeperville, the vilest place on the internet. And these disgusting bigots attacked without, you know, we talked, you know, I admit it. We talked about it when the Bush twins, you know, Barbie and Jenna, would go out and drink and roll on floors and get all liquored up underage in bars. We talked about it. Sure. They were young adults. They weren't 21 and old enough to drink, but they were damn sure over 18. Malia Obama is not over 18. One of the comments by a right-winger regarding that photograph, well, she's a typical street whore. Look at him. Bunch of ghetto thugs. Ghetto street trash. And then this gem. Wonder when she'll get her first abortion. There was another photo on the thread of Michelle Obama talking to Malia. And it had been captioned, "To entertain her daughter, Michelle Obama loves to make monkey sounds." Now, bear in mind that many in this country consider Free Republic to simply be a grassroots discussion board for the conservative movement. You know, we're not talking about the Vinlanders or the Firm 22 like we were in the murder story earlier in the program. No. Those are right-wing hate groups, right? You know, those are practically Nazis. They are Nazis. They wear swastikas. They have it inked onto their skin, for the love of God. But this is Free Republic. This is a grassroots. But that's where conservatism is in America now. They make me sick. The whole family, Mammy, Pappy. The freeloading mammy-in-law, the misguided chillin', and especially little cuz. This is not the America I want representing my peeps. Could you imagine what world leaders must be thinking seeing this kind of street trash, and that we paid for this kind of street ghetto trash to go over there? It is said that out of the first 100 postings to that thread, only one comment objected to the hatred, the bigotry, the prejudice, and the racism. Them poor kids, I hope they're not punished with a baby. Hopefully they won't deal cocaine like the Kenyan. Kids didn't pay. One person said, we should steer clear of Obama's children. They can't help it if their old man is an anti-American hating Marxist pig. Someone else responded to that and said, The kids didn't pick their commie pinko pansy of a father, nor did they choose to be put into the spotlight, but Obama Sotoro is fair game, and so is his witch of a wife. Fair game. Yeah, I sure hope the Secret Service is keeping a close eye on these murderous thugs. Because I got a feeling they got more than their hands full trying to protect Renegade from them. Dirtbags. All of them. The White House is now a joke to the rest of the world. We have no respect, and this is not going to turn out well. Mark my words, we will be hit, and much worse than last time. We are now seen as weak and vulnerable. Ghetto and Chicago thugs have taken over. You can hear them praying for the terrorist attack if you listen real close, can't you? Yeah, you can. Another poster said, poor libs. Too late. The battle has been joined. Whew. See, they know. They know what they're doing, and they know what they want. And they're not afraid to say it. But if you point out that they're right-wing terrorists, they scream that their First Amendment rights are being violated. I keep telling you. They're coming. They mean you no good. They mean you no good at all. And here in the summer of 2009, they kill in churches. They kill when they open their doors. They kill in museums. They kill. Kill, kill, kill. That's what we're dealing with. You want another example? Let's try Jason Matera. Jason Matera is the spokesman for the Young Americas Foundation. Got a lot of nerve. I know a lot of Young America, and they're not anything like Jason Matera. In the wake of the opening of the Sotomayor hearings today, Jason Matera has posted the following on his Facebook page. If Sotomayor gained life experience from the ghetto, does that mean she'd have a tendency to shank Scalia? Oh, that's just them conservatives. Ain't they got a sense of humor? Yeah, he's young enough to be in the Young America, be the spokesperson, spokescreep for the Young America Foundation, and I'm sure he's all in support military. But he's not in uniform. And there's nothing to indicate that he ever has been. But given current recruiting trends, there's no reason to think he wouldn't fit right in. Does that mean she'd have a tendency to shank Scalia? No, see, Jason, you young fascist. Your side does that stuff. Not ours. Not ours. Hate upon hate upon hate upon hate. Yearning for death. Yearning for murder. That's where they are. Diane writes in and says, the peace sign's a broken cross? What the hell? I've never heard of that. Well, you didn't grow up in the basement of a Southern Baptist church in Alabama, Diane. Most people were just writing to me in slack-jawed amazement. What? What, Bob? Jesus didn't drink real wine? What? Yeah, we were taught that, too. But I spent way too much time on that, so we'll just keep moving. But yeah, really. So there's that. That little bit of hate. It's all over the place. It's like some sort of poop storm of hate. It's like a hate volcano has erupted somewhere in the bowels of the Republican National Committee, and it's just spewing forth all over the country. Even, like this is a surprise, Pat Buchanan, can't even stay away from the eliminationist rhetoric. Young Levi Johnston, the 19-year-old father of Trip Keyshawn Flapjack Johnston, whatever. Funniest thing Bart Cop ever wrote, honest to God. I still chuckle when I read that. Appeared on NBC's Today Show. Johnston did. And said, among other things, that after they lost the election, the Godzilla from Wasilla really thought they were going to win. She didn't realize that she was a placeholder. She didn't realize that she and John were being set up as patsies and chumps because the Republican Party had no interest whatsoever in having the presidency after George Bush had gotten done robbing, and his cronies, of course, had gotten done robbing us all blind. They didn't want to deal with the problems. It's much easier to sit back and point fingers and play what the Bush administration used to euphemistically refer to as the blame game. No, Godzilla from Wasilla thought she was going to be the vice president and that she was only going to be one weak little heartbeat away. One more good skin cancer away from being the president. And Levi Johnston talked about the fact that she moped around the house and didn't seem to have any interest in being the governor of Alaska no more. It's just sad, isn't it? And then he also said that if she ran for president, Levi said, that he probably wouldn't vote for Mussolini. So then, in response to that, Pat Buchanan, the guy who goes and orders two pairs of Brooks Brothers shoes a year and they know the size, wears them everywhere but to bed and the shower, Pat Buchanan showed up on Morning Joe today, where he opined about young Levi Johnston. Like I said, it's more of the same.
Take it to Nora and try and pick apart here what's going on, barring what Levi Johnston has to say.
Well, first, with regard to Levi, I think first dude up there in Alaska, Todd Palin, ought to take Levi down to the creek and hold his head underwater until the thrashing stops. Now, let me...
Ho, 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 ho. Just listen to the people in the for-profit media. Dang, did you hear that? Old Pat just called for first dude Todd to go and drown Levi Johnston. Oh, I tell you what. Oh, that's some gut-busting funnies what that is. I mean, you can't get funny. Yeah, you know, Seinfeld was funny, but that's funnier, Pat. Holy God almighty, what a bunch of psychos. Listen to the laughter.
Dude up there in Alaska, Todd Palin, ought to take Levi down to the creek and hold his head underwater until the thrashing stops. Now, let me talk about
that's
Sarah
a reality
Palin.
Show, right?
Okay.
There.
And just to clarify,
that was Mark Helprin from Time Magazine who said that's a reality show right there. Can you imagine that? Now, you know the extreme high regard in which we at the Horn, and I in particular, and a couple of other people, hold the late, great Bill Hicks. Bill Hicks, toward the end of his life, had his heart absolutely broken by someone he admired and respected, namely David Letterman. Because he came and taped a segment for the a segment of the Letterman show, and Letterman pulled it and would not let it air. The reason he wouldn't let it air is in part because Bill Hicks began that segment by saying, "Hey everybody, yeah, I hadn't been around in a while, been really really busy. It's really great to see you guys. Always love to be back in New York." Comic banter. Yeah, I've been busy. I finally got my first TV show. Yeah, it's good. I've shot the pilot, and it's going to air in the fall, and it's really cool, and I hope you all watch. It's called Let's Hunt and Kill Billy Ray Cyrus. And that was unacceptable. That was unacceptable on a comedy talk program. However, on a news program on MSNBC, it is not only acceptable for a professional for-profit political pundit of long patronage to suggest that a man in Alaska hold another man's head underwater until the thrashing stops. In other words, until he is drowned and dead. It's not only acceptable to say that, the rest of the for-profit media just thinks it's a hoot.
I think first dude up there in Alaska, Todd Palin, ought to take Levi down to the creek and hold his head underwater until the thrashing stops. Now, let me talk about
that's
Sarah
a reality
Palin.
Show, right?
Okay.
There.
And just
yeah. But then they realized, especially Mika Brzezinski, that sitting there and laughing about premeditated first-degree murder, revenge killing, if you will. Gosh, and I thought we were so much better than those heathens in Iraq. They do that honor revenge killing stuff all the time, don't they? Yeah, but they're, you know how they are. I mean, they're not Americans. What was that? They don't value life like we do. Right. That Pat Buchanan, he just breaks me up. Yeah, then suddenly it dawned on Mika Brzezinski that maybe that wasn't the that maybe she needed to backtrack a little bit.
To clarify Pat's incredible statement about Levi, Morning Joe does not advocate any violence against Levi Johnson or anyone else related to the Palin story. That was priceless, Pat.
God almighty! Oh, that was priceless, Pat. Sitting there doing a disclaimer. Doing a disclaimer. And chuckling about the advocacy of murder. At the same time. Mom. But that's what you get from the for-profit media. Hell, Levi Johnston's not even a liberal as far as I can tell. Oh, by the way, one of the other things that he said was that at one point in time, Sarah had said she wanted to take a gig on a reality TV show, but the family vetoed her. Yeah. Because that's what it all was for Sarah Palin. It was one big reality TV show where she got lots of, those are just Marvy, those new duds from Neiman Marcus, don't you know? And maybe she could get another $22,000 an hour makeup artist and wear lots of glitter and rhinestones. Hey. You know, Pat, why don't you go up to Alaska and send us back some essays like you did about Nixon, about Sarah Palin taking long introspective walks on the beach. But no. No, the specialty de la maison of the right wing today is murder. What Shakespeare called heady murder. Classy bunch, those pro-life Republicans, huh? Gotta love them. Wow, this has been a two-hour filibobster. Is it going to be a three-hour filibobster? It's entirely up to you. This is America's listener-supported liberal voice activist radio like no other. This is The Horn. We'll be right back.